Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Daled Amud Aleph, nine lines down. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish as to what is the source for the prisha of the Kohen Gadol prior to Yom Kippurim for 7 days. Rabbi Yochanan believes that the source is the Miluim, whereas Rabbi Shlakish believes that the source is Har Sinai. And now the Gemara says, Tanya kavate de Rabbi Yochanan, and Tanya kavate de Rish Lakish. We have a braita that supports the position of Rabbi Yochanan. We also have a braita that supports the position of Rish Lakish. Tanya kavate de Rabbi Yochanan. We have a braita that supports the position of Rabbi Yochanan, because the pasuk in Achrimot says, Bezot yavo Aharon elakodesh. It's describing the process by which Aaron is permitted to come into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And then it says, Bezot Yavo Aaron El HaKodesh, with this. Now, Bezot is written in the female form. And then it gives you afterwards two items that are of a male conjugation, which is Par Ben Bekar, the Chatat Va'el Be'ola. So the Bezot can't be referencing that. In addition, in the previous Pasuk, it says, Ve'yomer Hashem Moshe, Deber Aron Achicha, Va'yavo B'cholet El HaKodesh Mi Beit LaParochet, El Pnei HaKaporet, Asher Aron V'loyamut, Ki Be'anan Erei Al HaKaporet. So also over there, it gives you the reason why he may not enter, but doesn't give you the information of what will permit him to enter. So the Pashtut HaPasuk, according to many of the Rishonim, is Bezot, means with the Ketoret, which is a female form. The Gemara over here, based on the Braita, says, Bameh Shamur Be'inyan, but was written in the context. Well, what's the context here? Mahi, Be'inyan HaMiluim, that the context of this Pasuk is actually the Miluim, and that's based on the first Pasuk in Achrimot, which is Ve'edaber Shema Moshe Acharei Mot. So the context here is after the death of Nadav and Avihu, after the Miluim. And the Miluim and the Prisha of the separation are female form. And therefore, Bezot Yavo Aron is referencing back to the Prisha of the Miluim. And that is what's required from Aron in order to enter into the Kodesh to go Lifnai V'Lifnim, is that he separate himself out 7 days prior. Uma Amur Binyan de Miluim, just like by the Miluim it says Aron Pirei Shiv'a Vishimesh Yom Echad, he separated out 7 days and then served for 1 day. Umoshe Masado Ko Shiva Kedei L'Hanecho B'Avodah, and in the first 7 days Moshe instructed Aaron as to how to do the Avodah and the proper way to do it. Moshe served as the Kohen Gadol during the first 7 days of the Miluim. And then Aaron takes over on the 8th day. So now, during those 7 days, Moshe was teaching Aaron how to do it properly, or how to act. Vaf ledorot. So too, every year, Kohen Gadol Poresh Shiva, he separates out 7 days before, Umeshamesh Yom Echad, and then he does the service of Yom HaKippurim on the day of Yom Kippur. Ushnei Talmidei Chachamim Mitalmidav Shel Moshe, and two Talmidei Chachamim who are the students of Moshe Rabbeinu. The reason that you have two here, the Tosfot Yishanim says that it's not necessary to have two. One would be sufficient, but two's even better. But they are Tamidim Shemoshe Lafuke Tzdukim, Tzud Tzdukim, Mosrim Lo Kol Shiva Kedei Lechancho Ba'avudah. They give him two Tamidim of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is to the exclusion of Tzdukim, who do not follow the ways of Moshe Rabbeinu. We give him all 7 days in order to train him in the Avudah, which will be discussed later on in the Mishnayot and the Gemara in Yomah. Now the Afuke Tzdukim is a parenthetical note over here because of the argument between the Prushim and the Tzdukim with regards to how the Ketoret is performed on Yom HaKippurim, which became a central issue for the Kohanim Gedolim in Bayit Sheni in those fights over which way the Ketoret would be done and whether the Kohen Gadol would abide by the law of the Prushim or would he fall prey to the ways of the Tzdukim. So that's why it's probably added here parenthetically that Tamidav Shel Moshe, obviously not the Tzdukim, who don't follow the proper interpretation of the Pasuk with regards to the Ketoret. But they are given over to the Kohen Gadol to train him during those 7 days. Mikan Amru. From here we say, Shivat Yamim Kodem Yom HaKippurim Mafrishim Kohen Gadol Mi Beito Lishkat Parhedrin. This is the source for what's written in our Mishnah, that 7 days before or prior to Yom HaKippurim, the Kohen Gadol leaves his house and is sequestered in the Lishkat Parhedrin. Shem Shem Mafrishim Kohen Gadol, Kach Mafrishim Kohen Asarei Feta Parah, Lishka Shel Pnei Abirah Tzfon HaMizracha. Same way that the Kohen Gadol is separated out or sequestered for the 7 days prior to Yom Kippurim, so too the Kohen that performs the Sreifat HaParah, he is sequestered in the northeastern chamber that is on the birah. Now, there's not a direct line between these two, because the source for the fact that there's a separation of 7 days for Yom HaKippurim comes from the Pasuk and is derived from Bezot Yavo Aron, connecting it back to the Miluim. On the other hand, the separation by the Parah Adumah is simply a Ma'ala Ba'alma, as we saw yesterday. It's a directive that comes from the significance or the uniqueness of the Srifat HaParah. But the Brayta here connects the two and says, similar to what happens by Yom HaKippurim, that is what happens by the Parah, not in the sense of the source is the same, but the sense is that the same performance or same law of separating out 7 days before is similar between these two. Ve'echad zeh, whether it's the Kohen Gadol prior to Yom HaKippurim, or whether it's the Kohen prior to the Srifat HaParah, mazina lav kol shiv'ah, you sprinkle on him all 7 days, mikol chata'ot shayu sham, from all the chata'ot that were there. We discussed this in yesterday's daf, whether that refers to the little piece of every parah aduma which they kept in the chel, so they sprinkled on him from every one of those parah adumot as a safety, or whether it meant it was the leftovers from the parah aduma Moshe Rabbeinu that they sprinkled on him. But either way, they sprinkled on him on 7 days because of the safek tumata meit, in order to make sure that he was completely tahor. Vim tomar bimiluim dam. If you say, well, the sprinkling, the viyaz al aron ubanav that was done during the miluim was done with blood. Hachamayim, and over here we're talking about the sprinkling of the ashes of the parah duma that are placed in a mayim chayim el keli. Then how can you compare the two? Amart, nichnesu mayim tachad dam. We've already learned that the water replaces the dam. So that we saw above with the Braita of Rabbi Chiya that suggested that in this case the blood is replaced by water. Whether that means that the din here is only a din derabona, not din deraita, like Tosavot says, that it's only an asmachta bi'alma, not a real limud. Or whether you think by, like some of the other Rishonim, the fact that there's haza'a is enough to have the comparison between them or consider them to be parallel, the material that is used is less important. Ve'omer. And now we have an additional source for the fact that the Kohen Gadol is Poresh 7 days prior to the Miluim, as well as 7 days prior to the Parah Aduma. And that is because of the Pasuk that we've been quoting all along, which is, Kasher asa b'yom hazeh, tziva Hashem lasot l'chaper l'echem, lasot elu maseh parah, l'chaper elu maseh yom ha-kippurim. So now the Gemara goes back and looks at the Braita. The Gemara says, v'hai b'zot, mibayle l'gufei, Hazot we need for the parsha itself. Bezot tells you that what does Aaron have to bring in order to have the performance of Yom HaKippurim? The tail end of the pasuk, which is parben bakar lechatat, v'ayil de'ola. Amrei, either karban l'chudei, if it was just coming to teach us about the korban, le'makrab bazeh or be'ele. Tovar should have used the term bazeh or be'ele, which is the male form, and that would have been sufficient. My bezot, why did it change into the female form? Shvamina tarti. From there you learn two things. One thing is what's written in the Pasuk itself, plus the additional item, Bezot, which refers back to the Prisha that is connected to the Miluim through the fact that it's written, Achrei Mot, Shnei Bnei Aaron. So we learn two things out of Bezot because of the way that it is formulated in the Torah. Gemara says, Mai Veomer, why do I need a secondary proof? V'chitayim Yom HaKippurim Kamahu Dubai Prisha, that only the first Yom HaKippurim requires Prisha, Kadash Kohan B'Miluim, just like Miluim, where a one-time first-time event in terms of putting the Mishkan into service, maybe so too with regards to Yom HaKippurim, only the first Yom Kippur requires this type of Prisha. Aval b'Yom HaKippurim da'al malo, but any subsequent Yom HaKippurim would not require that type of Prisha. Inami, Kohen Gadol kamahu d'bai Prisha, only the first Kohen Gadol would require Prisha. Aval Kohen Gadol ba'alma, generally a Kohen Gadol would not require Prisha, similar to what happened with the Miluim. Only the first Kohenim or the Kohen Gadol required the Miluim. So too, only the first performance by a Kohen Gadol of Yom HaKippurim would require Prisha, Kamash Malon, but that is not the case, and that Tashma, that we have, Kashir Asa. The additional pasuk tells us that this has a longer duration to it, so it's not simply a one-time event, but rather a recurring requirement that what we did in the Miluim must recur every year with regards to Yom HaKippurim. So that is the Braita that supports the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Because it's clear from the Braita that the source for the Prisha of Yom HaKippurim comes from the Miluim. On the other hand, it's against Rabbi Yochanan's position with regards to the derivation from the Pasuk that it's only for the Miluim and not Parah Aduma. Here, it sounds like from the Braita that it applies both to the Parah Aduma as well as Yom HaKippurim. Though Tosafot points out on the previous Amud that the proper Girsa in the Braita And he thinks that Rashi had this similar girsa, is that lasot l'chaper ze maseh yom ha-kippurim, as opposed to the girsa that we have in the Braita, Tosfot alters it, and therefore it would be completely tanya kavatei de Rabbi Yochanan, a Braita that supports Rabbi Yochanan in both of his positions. One is that the source for the prishah of Yom HaKippurim comes from the Miluim, in addition to the fact that they darshan have that pasuk from the Miluim only as a source for Yom HaKippurim and not a source for the Para Aduma. Now we have Tanya Kavate de Reish Lakish. We have a Braita that supports Reish Lakish that the source for the Miluim comes from Har Sinai, because it says, Moshe ala be'anan, v'nitkase be'anan, v'nitkadesh be'anan. Moshe went up into this cloud, he was enveloped by the cloud, and he was sanctified by the cloud. Kedei dekabel Torah liYisrael b'kedusha, in order that he can receive the Torah on behalf of Bnei Yisrael, while he was sanctified, shenemar, v'yishkon kavod Hashem al Har Sinai, the presence of Hashem descended upon Har Sinai. Zaya maseh achar aseret ha-dibrot. This whole event took place after the giving of the aseret ha-dibrot. Shayu tchila arba'im yom, divrei Rabbi Yosi Galili. These are the first days of the arba'im yom according to Rabbi Yosi Galili. So according to Rabbi Yosi Galili, the presence of Hashem on Har Sinai and then Moshe's being called into Har Sinai on the seventh day is specifically for Moshe Rabbeinu. And it is the initiation rite to allow Moshe Rabbeinu to go up to Har Sinai to receive the remainder of the Torah, because these 6 days begin after the Torah has already been given, and they are the first 6 days of the 40 days that Moshe spends up on Har Sinai. And therefore it's an indication of what you have to undergo in order to enter into the Makom HaShechinah. And that's how this is a support for that position, Reish Lakish, that Har Sinai is the source for this. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Vayishkon Kvod Hashem, when it says Vayishkon Kvod Hashem in Parshat Mishpatim, it means Mi Rosh Chodesh. That is starting on Rosh Chodesh. Vechaseo Anan Lahar. And then the mountain was covered by the presence of Hashem, Vayikra El Moshe. The Pasuk says in Parshat Mishpatim, Vayishkon Kvod Hashem Har Sinai, Vechaseo Anan Sheshit Yamim. The cloud envelops the mountain for 6 days. And then Vayikra Moshe Bayom HaShvi Mitoch Anan. And then he's called on the seventh day from the Anan. So according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, this all took place after Mamad Har Sinai, and it's directed particularly at Moshe. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva believes that this took place prior to Mamad Har Sinai. It was the 6 days leading into Mamad Har Sinai. If that's the case, then why does it only say, Vayikra Moshe b'yom ha-shvi b'toch ha-anan? He should have called to all of Bnei Israel. So here, Braita continues and explains the position of Rabbi Akiva that Vayikra Moshe, Moshe v'chol Yisrael omdim, that Moshe and all Bnei Yisrael were standing there, and the call was to all of them together. V'lo ba katuv el achalei kavod Moshe. The pasuk is giving kavod to Moshe, saying that the call of Hashem, or the speaking of Hashem, was directed at Moshe, but it doesn't mean that Bnei Yisrael were not participants or didn't hear it. In a sense, you could argue that Hashem was speaking to Moshe, and Bnei Yisrael overheard the conversation between Hashem and Moshe. That's one way you could explain it. Or, more generally, the talking of Hashem was directed at everyone, but Hashem calls to Moshe, Moshe being the leader of Klal Yisrael, and he's calling to all of them together, but he uses Moshe as the representative of the people to call all the people. Rabbi Natan Omer, Rabbi Natan, here's a third Tana in this Braita, says, Lo ba katuv el marek achila v'shtiya shebimeav, v'sumo kemalachei asheret. Rabbi Natan agrees with Rabbi Yosi Aglili that these 6 days are post Mamad Har Sinai, but he sees it as a prerequisite for Moshe to enter into Har Sinai, because he's going to be like a malach. He's going to be like an angel up in heaven. So in order to do that, he had to have his human side of him removed, and that is to clear out all the achila and shtia, all the food and liquids that are inside of him, and to make him like a malach elukim. In order to do that, he had this 6 day waiting period in the cloud before he goes up to Shemayim. So the difference between Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yosef Galili is Rabbi Natan says it's specific to Moshe Rabbeinu, and you cannot extrapolate from that to Yom HaKippurim necessarily, because it was a unique event with regards to Moshe Rabbeinu. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef Galili, who thinks it's not unique to Moshe, but has to do with entering into the Machane Shechinah, would have application of that more broadly to Yom HaKippurim. Now we have a fourth position here, which is Rabbi Matya ben Charash, Omer, Lo Bakatuv Elo Le'aim Alav. The Apostle is only going to teach you that they want to instill fear in Moshe. G'day She Torah Nitenet Be'ima Beretet U'Bizeah. In order that the Torah be given in fear, trembling, and sweating out of anxiety. I mean that there's a certain amount of trepidation that comes with the receipt of the Torah, Shenemar, based on the pasuk, which is, Ivdu et Hashem bi'ira. One must worship Hashem bi'ira in fear. Vigil'u bi'rada. And the rejoicing should be done through trembling. Now, obviously, Vigilu Bir Adah seem to be incompatible. How could it be that you're telling someone to rejoice at the same time to be trembling? So, my Vigilu Bir Adah, how do you explain that? Amar of Adabar Matno Amarav, Bemakom Gila, Sham Tehira Adah. In the place of rejoicing, there should be trembling. As Rashi points out over here, that the receipt of the Torah, Matan Torah of the Luchot, which says, Pigudei Hashem, Isharim Isam Chalev, brings rejoicing to the individual, should be done in the context of Re'adah, of fear and trembling. This Gemara is much more extensive in Brachot, Daf Lamed, and over there it describes different manifestations of this idea of Gilu Bir Adah. One of them is the state of mind one must be in when they approach Hashem in Tefillah, which is Ein Dom Dim Litpalel Mitoch Kovid Rosh, that a person has to approach Hashem with a certain amount of seriousness. And the Gilu Bir Adah is that we are rejoicing, we are given the privilege to stand before the King and to speak to the Melech Malchei HaMelechim. But despite that fact, we have to do it in a manner that is befitting Bir Adah. We have to be in the proper state of mind to do that. In a similar vein there, the Gemara continues and speaks about a number of instances, one in about Limud Torah, and there it even seems to be Dvarim Ba'almo, that a person must conduct themselves that even if they are enjoying or rejoicing, there should be a certain sense of trepidation about all that rejoicing, either to prevent one from acting inappropriately, or in order to put one in the proper state of mind, meaning that for learning Torah, just like the Torah was given in such a manner of trepidation and fear, so to one who learns Torah and receives it from his Rebbe should also be in that state of mind in order to receive it the same way it was given at Har Sinai. In addition, one who's learning Torah should not be in a state of frivolity or a state of mind where they aren't taking it seriously. They should be Gilu Bir Adah. In a more general sense, when a person is rejoicing, for instance, at a wedding, there where there is a certain sense of unbridled joy, then there's still this aspect of Re'adah. And the Gemara over there talks about cases or instances where they were at weddings, and the person whose child's wedding it was broke something expensive or special in order to bring a certain amount of seriousness back to the event, or to make sure that the Rabbanan there did not act inappropriately. And for that reason, Tosfot over there says this is the source that we break a cup at the wedding. Not just Zecher the Churban, but also because of what's written here in the Gemara of Gilu Bir Adah, that a person has to conduct themselves in a certain manner that is appropriate, not going beyond certain limits and inhibited behavior when it comes to rejoicing. And the breaking of the cup reminds us of that Gilu Bir Adah. It's also to remind us of Zecher the Churban, that even at that moment of ultimate joy, that we break something, we remember about Churban Yerushalayim, because Churban Yerushalayim, in a sense, puts a limitation or a cap on any joy that we can have. So at the height of our joy, we also remember Yerushalayim, which limits our ability to have that height of unbridled joy. So Tosafot claims that that is the source for our breaking the glass. At the weddings, the poskim bring down that the minhag developed that we all break the same thing. Over there in the stories in Brachot, they bring expensive things. But in order not to embarrass anybody because of their socioeconomic standing, we did it consistently that everybody broke the similar type of glass at the wedding in order that we have this feeling of Vigilu Bir Adah. Tosafot does ask over here, why is this bright that support for Reish Lakish and not for Rabbi Yochanan? Because Rabbi Akiva's position also supports that position of Rabbi Yochanan. So he says, Enochanami, but they had a better brayta that was completely like Rabbi Yochanan, that's why they brought it. But then he extends further and says, why can't we say that Rabbi Yochanan can say, I can even hold like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and suggest, that can no come Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that would be Sinai. Hachiyava, but the Dorot, lo gamrina mina. That's right, that's the way it happened at Har Sinai, but that has no implications for the future. In the future, I hold like Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan can fit Rabbi Yossi Aglili into his position as well. Those of us, it says in the end, no, because we find later on in the Gemara that Rabbi Elazar, his position is equated with Rabbi Akiva, and we know that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is a Talmid Chover of Rabbi Yochanan. We saw that back in Masechet Shkalim, that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is both a Talmid and then a Chover of Rabbi Yochanan. And if Rabbi Elazar, who is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, subscribes to that position of Rabbi Akiva, it shows you that Rabbi Yochanan also subscribes to that position of Rabbi Akiva. And why would Rabbi Yochanan align his position with Rabbi Akiva if you have three other Tanaim that disagree with Rabbi Akiva? It must come to say to you that he believes that Rabbi Akiva's position is right, and that he does not square with the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And so based on that, We say that Rabbi Yosef Glili is clearly supporting the position of Reish Lakish and not like Rabbi Yochanan. By Ma'ita Miflige, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Yosef Glili and Rabbi Akiva. What is the source or the shorish HaMachloket between them? Gemara says, B'plukta Dahani Tanai. It's the Machloket of these other Tanaim, which is found in the Gemara and Shabbat much more extensively. Over here, where they just quote their final opinions, but not the source for those opinions, the Tanya. B'shisha B'chodesh Nitna Torah L'Yisrael. On the 6th of Sivan, the Torah was given to Israel. Rabbi Yossi Omer B'shiva Bal. Then on the 7th of Sivan, the Torah was given. Mada Amar B'shisha, the one who says on the 6th of Sivan, B'shisha Nitna, the Torah was given on the 7th day, U'B'shiva Allah. And Moshe ascended to Har Sinai afterwards on the 7th day. This is brought in here parenthetically because it'll help us in the Gemara coming up. Mandamar b'shiva, the one who said that the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan, b'shiva nitna, the Torah was given on the 7th day, u'b'shiva la. And Moshe ascended to Har Sinai on the 7th day, d'chtiv, v'yikra Moshe b'yom ha-shevi'i. The Hashem called to Moshe on the 7th day. Rabbi Yosef Glili savar la ketana kama. Rabbi Yosef Glili holds like the Tana kama, damar b'shisha b'chodesh nitna Torah. And on the 6th day of Sivan, the Torah was given. If that's the case, then the pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim and Perek Chavdalet can't be referring to pre Har Sinai, because over there it says, Vayishkon, Kvod Hashem Har Sinai, V'chasei Onan, Sheshit Yamim, that the mountain was covered for 6 days, and Moshe was only called on the 7th day. If the Torah is given on the 6th day, then there's no way that that can match, because then Onan was still covering, and Moshe was only called on the 7th day. Number two is that we know that Moshe was going up and down the mountain, relaying the information from Hashem to Bnei Yisrael about Hagbalat Ahar, and exactly how Bnei Yisrael had to prepare. And therefore, it couldn't have been that the mountain was encapsulated with the Anan, and Moshe Rabbeinu was coming up and down, and he wasn't sequestered up there. So based on that, Rabbi Yosef Glili says it must be that this statement happened post Mamad Har Sinai. So since he holds like the Tana Kama that happened on the 6th of Sivan, he says that the Pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim clearly took place post Mamad Har Sinai. And therefore, you come to the conclusion that this must take place after Mamad Har Sinai. Vayishkon Kvod Hashem Har Sinai vechasei onan sheish yamim leMoshe. Vayikra Moshe b'yom ha-shvi'i lekublei shar Torah. He was called on the 7th day to receive the remainder of the Torah, which he did in those 40 days and 40 nights on Har Sinai. Because if you think Vayishkon Kvod Hashem Rosh Chodesh vechasei onan the har, and the mountain was covered by the cloud, Vayikra Moshe b'yom ha-shvi'i lekublei aseret ha-dibrot, and he's called on the 7th day to receive the aseret ha-dibrot, he already accepted it on the 6th day of Sivan. And the cloud was already gone on the 6th day. So it can't be that that's explanation. Ella, it must be that this whole event is post Mamad Har Sinai. And then Rabbi Akiva savar laki Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Yossi damar b'shiva b'chodesh nitna Torah l'Yisrael. On the 7th day, the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael. Therefore, you could have the 6 days of the Anan covering the mountain, and Moshe is called up on the 7th day. And like Rabbi Akiva says over there, when he's called, it's not about Moshe himself, it's l'chalei kavod the Moshe Rabbeinu. Now Gemara says, Bishlam ala Rabbi Akiva, inu d'mishkachad l'abishiva asar b'tamuz nishtar b'aluchot. Now I understand why on Shiva Sar b'tamuz we have the fast day of Shiva Sar b'tamuz, and one of the reasons given in the Gemara and Tanit is because nishtar aluchot, luchot were broken on the 17th day of Tamuz. Well, if that works out, if you think that the luchot received on the 7th day of Sivan, then if you count 40 days from that point in time, you end up on the 7th of Nisan, because you have a Srim V'Arbad Sivan, you have the 24 days remaining in Sivan. Sivan is always a Malay month, v'chitzar de Tamuz, and 16 days into Tamuz, and then Moshe comes back on the 17th day. So there you have the 40 days and 40 nights starting from the 7th day when Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, and that includes 24 days from Sivan, 16 days of Tamuz, the completion of the 40 days, and he descends on the 17th. Hello, Rabbi Yosef Glili, damar shisha de prisha, varavin dahar, adesrim betalat betamuz, loit bar luchot. If you say like Rabbi Yosef Glili that the 6 days only begin after Mamad Har Sinai, that means you have 6 days of sequestering, and then on the 7th day, Moshe is called up, and then he spends the 40 days and 40 nights up there. If that's the case, you postpone Moshe's return to Bnei Yisrael by 6 days. That means that he comes down on the 23rd of Tammuz, not on the 17th of Tammuz. If that's the case, then why were the luchot broken on the 17th of Tammuz? We should say they were broken on the 23rd of Tammuz. So the Gemara has a simple answer, which is Amalecha Rabbi Yosef Glili, Arba'im Tahar Bade Shisha de Prisha. The 40 days and the 40 nights on Har Sinai include the 6 days of sequestering of Moshe Rabbeinu. The 6 days are part of the 40-day count, and therefore the 40 days count from the seventh. And as is mentioned in both cases, Moshe ascended the Har on the seventh day. Even according to the Tanakhama, who said the Torah was received on the 6th of Sivan, Moshe only ascends the mountain to go up there for the 40 days and 40 nights on the 17th. Now, he needs to be there for a complete 40 days and 40 nights, and therefore that's why he comes down the 17th. For whatever time he ate up on the 7th to go up to Har Sinai, he didn't go up the night before, he went up sometime in the morning on the 7th. So in order to have a complete 40 days and 40 nights, he would only descend on the 17th at the same time that he ascended on the 7th. And so because of that, you get the full 40 days, according to Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, because even if you have the 6 days of sequestering afterwards, according to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, that's subsumed in the 40 days and 40 nights that Moshe was on Har Sinai. So Amar Mar, now the Gemara goes back and brings that quote from the Braita that we had before, which is, Vayikra Moshe, Moshe b'chol Yisrael omdim, that Moshe and Bnei Yisrael were standing there, and they heard this. Misaile the Rabbi Elazar, this helps Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Vayikra Moshe, Moshe b'chol Yisrael omdim, v'lo ba'katuv elo lechaik lo kavod Moshe Rabbeinu. And the only reason that the pasuk says Vayikra Moshe to him personally was to give kavod to Moshe Rabbeinu, not that Bnei Yisrael were not present and also hearing that. So here you have Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat being supported by that position of Rabbi Akiva in the Braita. Now Tosfot points out here, what type of support are we giving to Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat here? The Braita that we quoted before only has one out of the four positions that support him, which is Rabbi Akiva. According to the other three positions in the Braita, then Moshe Rabbeinu went up for the 40 days and 40 nights, and these 6 days were post Mamad Har Sinai. So why is saying that Rabbi Akiva holds like them any benefit? So Tosfot in the end says maybe because we have a principle that Alochik Rabbi Akiva mechaveiro. If Rabbi Akiva argues on a single individual, the Alocha is like him. When it's a Rabbi Akiva vechaveiram, the Alocha is not like him. So maybe because over here in the Braita we have individuals arguing on Rabbi Akiva, the Alocha is right by Rabbi Akiva, and therefore it's a good support for that position of Rabbi Elazar. Now the Gemara says, Meitavei, we have a problem with this position that Moshe Rabbeinu and all of Klal Yisrael heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu calling them at Har Sinai. Because it says by the Pasuk in Parshat Naso, where it describes the carbon note of the Nisim, and at the tail end of that Parsha, it describes over there, the whole purpose of this is so that Moshe Rabbeinu will be able to Vayishma et hakol midaber elav. Hashem will be able to communicate to Moshe Rabbeinu from the Kaporet, Ben Shnei Akruvim. And over there it says, Vayishma et hakol midaber elav, speaking to him. So the Braita says Kolo. It doesn't say that the Kol was speaking to him, Lo, but rather Elav. So why does it say Elav instead of Lo? Moshe Shema, V'chol Yisrael Lo Shamu. That's to teach you that Moshe was the only one who heard it, and Bnei Yisrael did not hear it. The Gemara and the Midrashim in other places tell us then you would think that's because the call, the voice was so low. The Gemara says, no, it was the same voice that spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai, the one that Mishaber Arim, that same call that spoke at Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai was the one that spoke to him in Olam Moed. But that was the miracle, that when Moshe went in, that call only reached Moshe Rabbeinu and no one else. And that's why the term, Vayishma Tokol Midaber Elav, is used to teach it to only him and not to any of Bnei Yisrael. So it sounds from here that when Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, he speaks to him and not to all of Klal Yisrael. So how do we reconcile that with what's written in Mishpatim, that Moshe was called, but Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva are saying, was really said to Moshe and all of Klal Yisrael? So the first answer to the question is Lokasha, Abba Sinai, Habo Moed. That's a distinction between Har Sinai. Everybody heard when Hashem spoke to Moshe, whereas in the Olam Moed, when it was spoken to Moshe only, and nobody else heard it. V'ibay Teima, Lokasha, Abba Kriya, Abba Dibur. The difference is between the calling and the Dibur. When you're talking about the conversation between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that only Moshe Rabbeinu heard. But when Hashem called out to Moshe, that not only Moshe heard, but all of Klal Yisrael heard. And that means that at Har Sinai, the same thing would be true as it was in the Olam Moed, based on this, which is that Moshe only heard the communication from Hashem, but the call for Moshe was heard both by Moshe and all of Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Zrika Rami Krai, Rabbi Zrika brought a steer on the psukim, kamed Rabbi Elazar, in front of Rabbi Elazar, Rami La, Ama Rabbi Zrika, Rabbi Elazar, Rami Ktiv. Or some say that Rabbi Zrika quoted that Rabbi Elazar saw this steer on the psukim and wanted to reconcile it. It says, V'lo yachol Moshe lavo el Olam Moed. Moshe, at the end of Parashat Pikudei, is unable to enter into the Mishkan, ki shachan alav ha'anan, because the presence of Hashem had filled the Mishkan, and therefore Moshe cannot enter. Uchtiv. And it says in Perech Avdal, the puzzle we quote here, by Moshe betoch ha'anan, that Moshe did enter into the presence or the area of the Shekhinah. So which one is it? Is Moshe able to enter in when the Anan is there, the Shekhinah is there, or is he not able to enter? So the answer that Rabbi Elazar gave was, No, Moshe himself could not enter, but Hashem, Keilu, stretched out and pulled Moshe Rabbeinu into the Anan. That's how we solve the problem. Moshe could not enter voluntarily into the Anan, but if Hashem escorted him in, then he was able to enter into the Anan. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tano, they answer the stira this way. Nemar kan betoch, nemar lahalan betoch. Over there it says betoch, and over here it says betoch. Vayov b'nei so betoch hayam. Just like the betoch, when Moshe goes into the Anan, we're going to compare it to the case where b'nei so go into the sea when they're leaving Mitzrayim. Malahan shvil. How did that happen? Through a path. Dichtiv amayim lahem choma. That the water was for them. Choma miminam mismolam. The water acted like a wall on their right and left, and they had a pathway through the middle. So too over here, that'll be the same. Afkan shvil. That Moshe Rabbeinu, you're right, could not enter into the Anan, but there was a little path that he was able to go through to enter into the Anan. So when the Anan fills up the whole area, he's unable to enter it. If the path is granted him, then he can go betoch Anan, which gives him the right or the ability to enter into the Anan. So that's the way Tebei Rabbi Yishmael answered this stira on the psukim. Then, right after the pasuk that we quoted from Parshat Pikudei that says that Moshe Rabbeinu was unable to enter into the Mishkan because of the Anan, the next sefer begins Vayikra El Moshe, which actually draws, as the Ramban al Torah points out, the parallel between Shmuel Perech Avdali, where Moshe is on Har Sinai, the Anan's there for 6 days, and then Moshe Rabbeinu is called into the Anan. Vayikra is the end of that pasuk where Moshe enters. So too, the end of Sefer Shmuel ends with the Anan filling up the Mishkan, and then in the beginning of Sefer Yikra, Moshe is called into the Mishkan. And so from that, the Ramban reiterates what we mentioned before in the introduction to Yoma, that the Ramban sees the Shekhinah, Shishara, Har Sinai, moved into the Mishkan, and the Mishkan is a continuation of Mamad Har Sinai, and that the Shekhinah that was present on Har Sinai is now present in the Mishkan, and therefore the same procedure is used. Just like on Har Sinai, the mountain was covered for 6 days by Anan, and then Moshe called in on the seventh day. So too, by the Mishkan, the Anan fills the Mishkan, Moshe is unable to enter, and then by Yikra Moshe, then Hashem calls out to Moshe. So Sefer Yikra begins, Vayibra Moshe, Vayidaber. Lama Yikdim Kriya LeDibur. Why is there a Kriya before Hashem converses with Moshe? Imda Torah Derech Eretz. The Torah is coming to teach you proper behavior, etiquette. Shelo Yomar Adam Davar L'Chivur Elim Kein Koreyu. You first should call to attention the individual you're going to speak to, and then only afterwards converse with them. You don't just start talking. You first of all engage the individual, and then after you've engaged them, then you converse with them. Misaile Rabbi Chanina. That helps Rabbi Chanina's position. Damar Rabbi Chanina. Lo yamar adam davar lechaviro im kein koreu. That a person should not speak or converse with an individual unless he's called to him first or brings him to attention. So that's supported by that braita. Leimor, which is the continuation of the pasuk. Vayikra Moshe, vayidaber Hashem elav me'ol moed leimor. What do we learn from the word Leimor? Amar Rabbi, whether the Gersir is Musi or Manasya, Barbarei de Rabbi Masya, the grandson of Rabbi Masya, Mishay de Rabbi Musi Rabbo, or whether the proper Gersir is Amar Rabbi Manasya Rabbo, Minayin Omer de Varlach Avero, Shubabal Tomar. If someone discloses information to you, how do you know that you're not allowed to repeat it? Adjumar lo Leimor, until he grants you permission to go and repeat it. Meaning that automatically you're under a oath of secrecy when someone discloses information to you, unless they give you explicit permission to retell the information. Shenemar, Vaydeber Hashem elav me'ol moed leimor. Leimor means that Hashem now gave Moshe permission to tell over the information to Bnei Yisrael. Without that, he would not have had permission to repeat the information. So that tells you the default status of a conversation between two individuals is that it remains private, and one cannot disclose the information that was conversed about. Rashi says, because Leimor is really a contraction of Lo Amor, do not say it unless you get specific permission, or you can learn it as Leimor, meaning that God was granting permission to Moshe to speak, but the default was that you could not disclose this information. This is actually brought down the Halacha under the rubric of Lo Telech Rachil B'Amecha, that one may not be a talebearer. Now, a talebearer doesn't just mean telling stories of Lashon Hara, but it is disclosing things that people want to be otherwise kept secret or told to you in confidence. Because the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Holech Rachil Migalesod. The one who is a Holech Rachil is one who reveals secrets. Beneman Ruach Mechaseh Davar. And a faithful individual keeps things private. And based on this Pasuk of Leimor, that means anytime you have a conversation with an individual, it's automatically subject to that requirement of secrecy. And if one violates that secrecy, they're in violation of the Isser of Lo Te'lech Rachil Be'amecha, unless the individual specifically gives you permission to disclose the information, or the setting in which the information is disclosed, meaning in public, then maybe you have a right to continue to disclose it, as long as the disclosure or the giving the information that you're giving over is not simply to keep spreading information or to be a rachil, but there is to'elah to the repeating of that information. What's interesting here is actually there are tshuvot written both by Rav Avadya Yosef as well as the Tzitz Eliezer with regards to the oath that a doctor takes when he goes into practice not to disclose the information that is given to him by patients. That he knows something about a patient, he is sworn to secrecy by the oath of his office as well as by the statute, which is that a professional, like a doctor, does not have the right to disclose information of the patient because that is considered to be private. And therefore, they cannot violate that by giving over the information. The Tzitz Eliezer deals with a very difficult case in where a woman is dating a man, and the doctor knows that this woman does not have a uterus, and she will be unable to have children. And the question is, does the doctor have an obligation to disclose this information to the young man who is dating her? The Tzitz Eliezer concludes in the end that he does have an obligation to disclose the information because lo tamor al dam re'echa. One cannot stand idly by to a person who's going to be injured or in danger, but that has broader implications. You can't stand idly by when a person's goof or mamon or life is going to be altered or changed for their detriment. So therefore, you have an obligation to disclose the information. The Tzitz Eliezer says that maybe he should take Ataret Nedarim in case the nether is still chal here, but he doesn't have an obligation to disclose the information. He does suggest that he speak to the girl first and let her voluntarily disclose the information, but tell her that if she doesn't, that he will disclose the information. Rav Avadya Yosef deals with a case where a person who has epilepsy is going to get a driver's license, and he does not disclose to the authorities when he goes to get the license that he has epilepsy, and he's now going to be awarded a driver's license, and he could have an epileptic seizure while he's driving and endanger many people. So the doctor wanted to know, or the individual wanted to know, should he disclose this to the Department of Motor Vehicles in order to make them aware of the fact that this person has epilepsy? And once again, Rabbi Avadya Yosef says the same thing, that there's a requirement of lo tamod adam re'echa. This is a dangerous situation, and the person's license, then he could cause tremendous damage, sakanat nefashot, and even possibly the loss of life. And therefore, the person has an obligation to disclose the information. This issue actually came up in more recent times in a case in New York area, in which there was a custody battle between a husband and wife who had divorced. Two rabbanim in that case testified on behalf of the husband that he should get custody of the children because the woman had disclosed to them information that she was no longer keeping a religious life or performing mitzvot like an Orthodox woman, that she had ceased to go to the mikveh, and that she no longer was necessarily interested in a religious life. And so because of that, the rabbis came to testify that the custody of the children should go to the husband, because giving them to the wife endangered their continued practice as Orthodox Jews. Leaving that aside, the woman then sued the rabbis for disclosing information that was governed by the clergy congregant privacy rule. And because she had disclosed this information to them as clergymen, they didn't have a right to disclose the information. The rabbis countered that claim and said that they disclosed the information because, first of all, they wanted to alert the husband that his wife was no longer going to the mikveh and that he could no longer be together with her, in addition to protect the children. And they felt that under Jewish law, they were obligated to disclose the information, and therefore the statute could not compel them to keep the privacy of the information when their religious beliefs compelled them to disclose the information. It would be a violation of their First Amendment rights. They were compelled not to disclose the information. The court there, with regards to the information that's between a congregant and the clergyman, says it's not subject to professional rulings. And there's a difference, that only in a case where the clergymen are used as spiritual advisors is it subject to that law, but simple conversations to clergymen are not automatically governed by that. But in addition, the court ruled that for the courts to decide as to whether religiously these rabbis were correct or not would be undue interference by the secular government into religious beliefs, and therefore it was not the appropriate place for the court to get involved. Lastly, they said that the statute only prevented that information that was disclosed to the clergy from being used as evidence in a trial. It did not give them a fiduciary duty to keep the information private, as opposed to what is with other professionals. So in the end, they dismissed the suit against the rabbis because of these technicalities in the law. But here we have a case where this issue actually came up about privacy versus lo tamod adam re'echa. Now the Gemara continues. It's clear from here that it seems too, according to both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that everything that's written by the Miluim is Me'akev. Ditmar. So now we have a discussion about this. Miluim, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina. We have a machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina as to what is Me'akev with regard to the Miluim. Chadamar, kol ha-ketuban, Me'akevan. Anything that's written by the Miluim is Me'akev. That means if you don't do it properly, exactly as it's written, it doesn't work. Chadamar, devar Me'akev, the dorot, Me'akevan. Anything that's Me'akev in future halacha outside of the Miluim will also be Me'akev during the Miluim. Anything that's not Me'akev, the dorot, is not Me'akev, the gabe, the Miluim. So tistayim, let us conclude the Rabbi Yochanan, who demar, because anything that's written in them is Ma'akev, he should be the author of that position because of what we saw yesterday. When Reish Lakish spoke to Rabbi Yochanan, he questioned him. He says, well, if you're telling me that that's the source for the Prisha by Yom HaKippurim, that means that it's Me'akev, because anything that happened by the Miluim is Me'akev, and therefore if you're going to use that as a source for Yom HaKippurim, you'd also be Me'akev there. And that can't be the case, because of the backup Kohen Gadol was not separated out for 7 days. The fact that, V'lo k'mahatuve, that Rabbi Yochanan does not respond to Reish Lakish, since he didn't say anything back to him, he doesn't respond. No, that's not the case. This time, we can conclude that Rabbi Yochanan is the author of the position that anything that's written by the Miluim is Me'akev, based on the fact that he does not respond to Reish Lakish's claim that that is the case. Okay, we'll stop over here, and tomorrow we'll continue with my Benayu. What's the nafka mina between this position, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina, as to what is Me'akev by the Miluim? Okay, we'll stop over here.